Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the China Startup Pulse. I'm Ryan Chukin here with Todd Embling.
Hi.
It's going good. How's it going?
It's going well.
just talking about this.
Grammar Nazi over here.
But I appreciate that. So today we had a guest who literally lives the world of lending and fintech in China.
And the word that we're not supposed to say, the acronym, yep. Remember? She pounced on it.
Oh, yeah. The
P2P.
P2P.
I'm saying it, Taryn. Yeah. Sorry. I know you're listening to this post. I'm saying it.
But, I mean, there's been a massive shift in not only the ideology, but the acceptance of lending and how it's done. And there's this huge learning curve that's happening right now in China.
Oh, huge.
And she talks about it. She talks about everything that's happening, everything that could happen and where it's going.
A really great person to talk to about this. I mean, she's always had an interest in this for her whole life, she says, and then she just couldn't help but get involved. And then so that's when she joined Lendit a few years ago. And I mean, just the numbers, right?
About
what was the P2P market size or market cap, you know, last year in the U.S. and the rest of the world, $15 billion. China, $58
billion. Yeah, insane.
And then we get into why.
Yeah.
Obviously, why? What's going on? Why is that the case? Because that's a huge difference. And, you know, we should explore what's going on in China that created such a hotbed for this activity here.
Yeah, let's get into it then.
Yeah, let's just get into it. Let's just stop talking. All right, Dr. Taryn Smith, enjoy.
Cheers. Hey, guys, we are back. We're here with Dr. Taryn Smith. And I'm just going to give everyone a quick update on her background and what she's been through all of her trip to even coming here and being in China. So she started at Clark Atlanta University, getting her bachelor's in business administration. But then after that, she was at the Claremont and Fudan program doing her PhD in economics. And that was in 2010. And then actually in 2007, when she was in the middle of that, she started and founded Strontium Group, and then she became the director of research for venture capital investment for Fudan University, and became and is also a Kauffman Fellow, and is now also the managing director of Lendit China. So, thank you. Welcome to the show.
You got it.
Having me.
You got it all.
Was that about right?
I think that's about right.
For those of you who have never heard of Fudan University, it's because it's actually Fudan, and we covered this like five or six times previous to the actual turning on the record button.
Yeah.
And yet you refuse.
I even went there.
God, it's amazing. It's a talent.
It's because you put the idea in my head.
I knew that kind of on purpose, too. I say, watch, he's going to say it like this. He's going to say it like this. And then what happens? He's like, I'm not going to do it. And then we get it recording, and then he does it.
There was also the strontium bit, but we'll get around to that.
Strontium or something.
Yeah, get around to that.
All right, let's get into it. Our listeners are getting tired of our silliness.
What's up, everybody?
All right, so you know, Ryan, I know that you're chomping at the bit
again,
and you know, how should we do? You know what you want? Do we want to lead off with like what the heck is Lendit? You want to just give like a bit of
Okay. So I'll start by kind of giving you guys a bit of intro, and then we'll dive into sort of what is the future of finance and all that. So Lendit, I've had the great pleasure of working with them for the last 3 years. They essentially are the largest global conference around internet finance and marketplace lending. Started back in like 2013 in New York City. Literally a bunch of investors saying we should get a couple of companies together that are in marketplace lending and, you know, build a small conference. So they set up a room for about 150 people, and I think it was like 300 or so people showed up. So they thought, wow, there's some real energy here. We might want to look into this space a bit deeper. And so they started building a new conference the next year, 2014, and got the bug that basically the Chinese market around internet finance kind of trumped the rest of the world.
Yes.
So that's when I got called in to talk about this mega market in China on internet finance.
How big is the market? Gotcha.
Yeah, so one of the ways that we qualify this market is by amount of originations. So I think, and you know, my co-founders, Peter Renton and Jason Jones, will probably hate that I'm going to butcher these numbers, but in the US and the rest of the world combined, mm-hmm. I think we did like 15 billion in originations, where China just last year did like 58 billion. That's big.
Okay.
And that number only represents like 5% of where we can go. So it's mega. Yeah.
I gotta ask this. It's because I'm dumb mm-hmm. and I let my wife manage all our money.
Nice.
What is an origination?
Origination. So that's where the loans are being made on the platforms for financing. So basically, the companies are originating loans, which is you or your friend or your wife wants to take out a mortgage or wants to, you know, buy a car. Life insurance, maybe.
on me.
So then the amount of that loan that they then give to you would be the amount.
Okay. Now, can you do this? Can you define what is P2P lending?
Ooh, I can first tell you that's a bad word.
That's right. I remember. Yeah. She's actually not allowed to say that.
Yeah. So I don't say the three acronym word that Todd has just given us. Yeah. So that word we also call internet financing or marketplace lending or inclusive finance.
I like that one because it sounds like we're together.
That's right. We're all in
this. Yeah, we're all in it together.
Yeah, to finance people. Yes, internet finance. Basically, you can use a medium like your mobile phone or your internet to both invest in other people's loans or their lending products. Peer-to-peer sort of lending. Huge market. We have the opportunity here in China to meet tons of companies. Not a whole lot like crowdfunding, but it does have some similarities. We have seen companies that are taking, you know, one investor and one loan. We've also seen folks who are taking on business loans that are much larger in size. We've also seen companies that are living in the in between, which is, you know, they're trying to rate the borrower side, so they're trying to get better information on what sort of loans are going out and who's requesting them. And then on the investor side, China, of course, has this terrible, terrible problem of having way too many investors. So most of the platforms actually have huge numbers of investor side relationships. Wow. And just really lack on the asset side.
I was going to ask you about that. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, the numbers that you said before between like the 15 billion and the 58 billion kind of thing. Why? I think that's like the most obvious question is like, what the heck is going on here that makes that such a disparaging number?
Yeah, so I'll take you back a little bit with Chinese capital markets, right? So we have a lovely black economy, sort of like underground economy here for financing, which has existed for ages. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, basically your guanxi, right? So mm-hmm. guanxi being the relationships that you have between your friends and relatives and sort of a social capital. And it would be very easy for me to walk up to someone I know for a long time and say, hey, can you make me a loan for, you know, 50,000 renminbi, and they would get together and sort of make this loan. But it's completely black market, so there's no mm-hmm. way for the government to see it or for any institutions to really know how much of that is going on. So essentially what's happened with internet finance is that all of that black market activity lives now on the internet, well, at least to about 5% of the market that we can see, right? So this is why we're able to see these types of numbers, because for so long, without any sort of regulation or any sort of insight, this type of loan making has been going on in China for ages.
Yeah.
Okay, Ryan, I know you've got a lot of questions. I've got a lot of things that I would like to jump into, but I know that this is something important for you. Jump in. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So you've been in China for a long time and you have a really interesting story about how you even got here. But it was all seemed to be fueled by you looking towards the future, towards the next big thing. And how did you foresee this being the next big thing in China so early?
Yeah, so it is true that I've been coming to China now for nearly 20 years. Although hair flip, I don't look like it. I think, you know, at that time there were so few foreigners here, and there was so much that you could just tangibly see walking down the street, looking at buildings, just kind of understanding the conversations people were having around what the West has versus what we have here in China. And I was inspired by that. I thought, hey, you know, if I'm going to make the rest of my life about the future of something with sort of an economic theme, China is probably the place for that to happen, right, in my lifetime. And so at that time, I was hyper focused on finance and economics. That's really my lens. And so as I saw, you know, as I saw sort of the non-performing loans with banks happening some years ago, and then I watched all the state banks sort of privatize, and I, you know, I sort of watched how the stock market came to be its own set of chaos. I thought, come on, this is just going to be the hotbed for everything that happens in finance, and with such a major market and the wealthy growing, you know, more and more wealthy more quickly than the rest of the world, and you know, with individuals getting better and better income. I mean, there's just, you know, you just kind of have this vision like, okay, they're going to demand better products. They're going to demand the opportunity to have access to a lot of the things which we have in the U.S. or, you know, anywhere else abroad. And so I wanted to be part of that story. And I think FinTech really sort of allows us to explore so much of what can happen for the future of finance, and particularly in China, where they're eager to let that future rest here far more quickly.
Yeah. Go ahead, Don.
I was just going to say, you set a demand for better products.
Yes.
But as far as I know, there were no, are no, haven't been until now, any products. I mean, there was no way. And this is something I wanted to chat about a bit. Is this there? I mean, for people to get small to medium businesses or even individuals to get loans from banks, there wasn't anything. So it wasn't even about better. It was about something.
Yeah, right. Can we just get any products up in here?
Yeah.
That'd be great.
And exactly.
And it's like an entrepreneur. You're just trying to build something here that just had never existed, right?
That's very true. Yeah.
That's a whole thing. I mean, and there's, you know, the reason why. I mean, talk about the lack of credit.
Right. And the lack of having any sort of track record around credit, right? Yeah. So, I mean, the second you're born anywhere else in the world, you're sort of given this FICO score, right? So you're like, nice way out the chute, FICO score, 650, right? So I mean, you just kind of like have this in your mind as a foreigner. And then here in China, I mean, I met 45 and 50-year-old people who have never actually thought about building a credit record, right? Or had the chance to, as a matter of fact, back to your first point, right? Yeah. So you walk into a bank and the only thing the bank really says to you is deposit your money here and keep it safe and make a savings account, right? They don't necessarily say to you, would you also like to have a home loan or an auto loan or, you know, any sort of way for us to build a credit history with you. So offering products would be great. And it isn't true that no one could go into the banks and get credit. We know that the state-owned enterprises do this very well. They're able to go into all of the banks and get as much credit as they'd like. However, as an individual or a small business, you can walk in, you can fill out an application, you can talk to a banker. 90% chance you're going to get rejected, right? So you don't really have those products. But, you know, as it grew, as smaller businesses, which, let's get technical for 1 second, right? Mm-hmm. So in China, you know, a small business is basically like less than 10,000 employees something, right?
So when you talk small in China, they're just like, oh yeah, right. Less than 10,000. Right. Where in the West, we're like, whoa, we got
less than 10.
We sort of got 10 people on my team. Could I get a loan for $100,000?
Oh, so, you've done well.
You're up to 10. Whereas here, it's like, well, you're kind of a small business at like 9,000 employees. So some of those companies have, you know, seen some success in being able to get lending to acquire loans. Mm-hmm. But usually it's because some kind of shareholder backing, right, where they have a state-owned entity or some sort of local state group, which is saying, we vouch for this small business. Yeah, yeah. M, and we will be the credit, if you will. So we're seeing some of it, but yeah, definitely.
That's with a different world.
It is. And, you know, with the invent now, with all of the fintech and all of the big companies which are doing online internet financing, you know, more and more small businesses and businesses we would consider to be small, as long as well as individuals, you know, they're getting more and more access to credit, which is great.
What about the internet banks that are now coming on board? What part do they play? Because
internet banks are pretty new.
The WeBank, you know, was they kind of won the race to market, and then their big opening ceremony was cutting the ribbon when they gave a truck driver a 35,000 renminbi loan to start something. You know, that was like their thing. So, you know, and obviously that was the promotion of like, hey, come to us, you know, we can help you where the other brick and mortars can't.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. So, I mean, the more and more that I'm, you know, face to face with so many of these companies, and I've been really lucky to, you know, to meet about 200, maybe 230 companies at this point, face to face. They are, you know, they are internet banking. I don't necessarily want to call them banks just yet, because we're not quite there, but they are providing the services that banks provide, and by that I mean they're making loans, they're taking deposits, they're allowing investors to make returns on their investments, and you know, I'm seeing this, and you know, it's challenging the status quo, which is great, which is one of the reasons why I'm, you know, totally into this space. And you know, as these internet platforms that, you know, conduct a lot of banking activity get bigger and bigger and can, you know, show their power compared to other maybe small commercial banks in China, we see the opposite happening, where the commercial banks are coming to the internet platforms and saying, how about you provide this internet service to, you know, our customers, because, you know, we're not Bank of China, or we're not, you know, one of the largest ones.
Would you say that the Chinese, because they're mobile first, a lot of them are mobile first in their nature, they experience the internet from their cell phones, they're more comfortable
absolutely
to go ahead and be like, yeah,
absolutely,
go through the phone, go through the internet, right?
Absolutely. I mean, we can see it with Zhifu Bao, and we can see it, I'm sorry, with the online payments programs and the transferring of money online. You've got WeChat, where I can send you, you know, hundreds of renminbi in 20 seconds. You know, it's just, as a young person in China, this is your expectation. I mean, you are 100% locked into even a cashless society almost. And it makes, you know, that challenging for, you know, our larger banks who are still living in sort of a very traditional mindset, which doesn't really click.
That's so crazy, because I've never thought about it that way. But I remember when I first came to China, it was so much of a cash society. It's still, a lot of parts are, but it was so much of a cash society. I remember just carrying wads of cash to pay my tuition or other things. You would just carry, and everybody else would just carry these big wads of cash.
Yeah, but they didn't have a wireless POS.
Oh no, it was so cash society.
No, you walked in with the
in with the bags, and now, like you said, it's skipped almost everything a cashless society,
almost completely.
It's almost there. Like, I get upset when I have to go into my wallet now these days. I'm like, I can't just WeChat you this. I can't just send it to you.
I go days, like literally week without having any cash, because if I need a taxi, I can actually just WeChat cash
him.
Like, no problem. I mean, I can go into any store, buy a pack of gum. Here's my WeChat, you know, QR code. Just scan the thing and I'm gone. I go to any superstore.
That's right.
Whatever.
Yeah. So I want to, we might need to, like, you know, get rid of this later, but I'll tell you a really quick story about cash in China, right? Back in 1998 when I was here.
And you were nine.
And I was somewhere around there. So, you know, this thing about cash, right? This might actually turn us into a conversation about fraud. But so essentially I was in the regular market spending cash, as everyone did back then, right? And I was given back a phony 100, right? And so after trying to spend this phony 100 several times, right, no one would take it. But I finally went to the bank. I went to, like, a regular, you know, we won't say which bank, and hopefully nobody comes after me. But I went to the ATM and I basically took out, you know, new money and went into the bank and asked for change. with the fake one inside, right? And so I get to the teller and he's like, no, this one is fake. And I'm like, no, I just got it out of your ATM.
Yeah.
So wait, you guys have the fake money, not me, right? So it was, and you know, it's like this is the kind of thing, right? So with cash, we run into a lot of these issues. Whereas if it's all digital, I don't ever have to be concerned if it's going to be fraudulent or fake.
I have gotten fake cash out of bank machines twice.
Yeah.
I went to, you know, the agricultural bank teller in the Beijing airport.
Yeah.
I arrived, didn't have any cash, took out 1,000 renminbi, and 8 of them were fake.
Yep.
8 of them. And so, I actually was able to spend a bunch of them. So, like, I was paying taxi drivers and they, it was night. They couldn't really look at it. Exactly, and they're like, okay. Right. And I unfortunately kind of screwed those guys over.
But. Yeah. Well, see, so here's the thing, right? So there's such a huge opportunity for like young companies, right? Who are seeing this like fraud type of trend happening digitally, right? Where we're online with these internet banks now. Well, okay. If I can't be fraudulent with my cash anymore, I can be fraudulent with my profile. I can be fraudulent with my what I'm asking for, what I'm actually looking for, why I'm going to spend the money. Mm-hmm. You know, what kind of loan do I really need or want, right? So, I want to take out a loan because I'm going to, you know, go on vacation, right? It's going to be a safe vacation. It's going to, you know, tick all of these boxes. But at the end, it's really because I want to go bungee jumping in Thailand, right? So, you know, it's like, how do we get, you know, better information? And I think there's a lot of startups out there who could really work on that.
Yeah. I think that's a very interesting question. I think it's a great segue. There's something I want to ask is about, you know, now that everybody's doing it digitally, doesn't that give us an opportunity to use big data to start creating these, you know, credit scores and things like that and help it out? We'll take a quick break, thank our sponsors, and come right back talking with Taryn Smith.
Here we go.
Hey, everyone. We want to give a shout out to our sponsors. China Accelerator is the number one accelerator in the East. They are a mentorship-driven program that takes your ideas from all over the world and helps you make them successful in China. At the same time, we take great ideas from inside China and help them grow all over the world. If you want to find out more, please visit www.chinaaccelerator.com, and batch 10 applications are going to be open soon, so it's a really good opportunity to get in there.
We also want to thank our other sponsor, PeopleSquared. PeopleSquared is the largest and best co-working space across China. They've got 8 or 9 spaces in Shanghai. They've got spaces up in Beijing. They've got spaces down in Shenzhen. They really are the best community of people to be dealing with here. So if you have a startup and you're coming to China, PeopleSquared is your number one choice.
And we'd also like to thank our syndication partner, Technode. They are the number one source for news and information about the startup ecosystem, what's going on inside of China. They also work with TechCrunch and helped publish and syndicate that. So we're really happy to have them on as a syndication partner. You can find out more at technode.com.
Okay, we're back with Taryn Smith. And Taryn,
hi.
How many P2P companies were there last year?
Oh my goodness. Depending on how you count and who you believe, you could have anywhere between 1,500 and 3,500 companies here in China.
How many do we have now?
You can technically still say we have about 1,257.
That's a big difference. Getting at why is that happening? What happened?
Yeah, well, I mean, a lot of these companies are still out there. They still exist. We're just not acknowledging them because there's so much fraud and there's so much bad press around a lot of...
How does fraud happen in this industry? Tell us how that happens. What is it? I want to know.
So, yeah, for goods. All those who just can't, you know...
No, but I'm serious.
Can't
I mean,
wait to find out about the fraudulent activities in China.
Not everybody is up to speed on P2P and finance and things like that. So...
And let's just say, you know, China is not unique in this space. I mean, everybody has fraudulent issues, but it seems to be, you know, extra big here because the market is so large. So essentially what we find is, you know, huge Ponzi schemes, right? So you start up a website, you say, hey, we're going to guarantee some, you know, return to investors. And those investors come on board.
I'm taking notes. What else do I say?
Yeah, exactly. And you advertise these guaranteed returns, right? And the investors just pour in and you've got tons of cash from them, but you have no assets. You have nothing to actually put that money in, right? And so the companies, the startup, you know, the founders of the crew just kind of like, vacation anyone? You know, like, everybody, somebody want a new private jet? Like, we've got enough money for that. And then that's just how it falls apart. And then in addition to that, you know, the platforms can be selling loans that, you know, that don't actually exist, or they've created profiles around different types of loans that they could give away to, you know, they can sell to the investor side, and they just don't return, right? Or so.
But I mean, that makes sense to me, because if there was a big boom and there was a lot of opportunity, now the ones that are doing it right, that have investable products, they're the ones that are coming to the top. They're the ones that are staying alive and making it happen. So that, yeah. I understand what you mean when it's, you say it's not, no different than any other place.
Right. And so, you know, and the ones that are rising to the top are the ones who are really challenging the product set and, you know, what's available and how do we get better and how do we find better ways to evaluate credit? How do we find better ways to create at least the idea of a track record or a credit track record? There's a couple of startups out there right now who are doing really good work in aggregating social data around an individual so that you can, you know, create some sort of a blanket about who you are on the internet and your purchasing and you know, all of your behaviors around money and transactions, so that you can at least have a story to tell when you're trying to get a loan.
Isn't that easier now because it's all on your phone? I mean, all of my purchase data is there.
All of your purchase data is there. Now imagine you spend like thousands of renminbi every day on Taobao, right? So if you're one of these like, you know, folks who are online always buying stuff from Taobao. Okay, now you've got, you know, you can show a lender like, hey, I spend all my money on Taobao, which is maybe not a great idea.
No, but it's a way to make the credit score. Right?
Yeah, it's something, right? It's at least showing you that, like, this is how, you know, I spend my money. On the other side of that, right, if you're the Taobao company, right, you can then say, hey, look, this is how people are spending money with me, right? I'm a small business.
I have,
you know, several boxes of inventory, and you can see every single day I've got, you know, 500 different purchases that are coming in. And, you know, as a lender, I can say, okay, great. You know, this is one way for me to be more confident that you're going to pay me back my loan, right? So that's kind of the way that happens.
Absolutely.
And so more ways to build that profile, that portfolio for the bigger companies is what we need, right? We need people who are out there doing big data analytics. We need folks that are out there, you know, shifting to AI and ways that we can really like capture all of this information on people and places and products and businesses, so that we can have a better understanding as to why we should grant more credit to, or how we could grant more credit.
I know that the governments have obviously waded into the Bitcoin pool pretty heavily, right? What is happening on inclusive finance markets, trying to stay away, you know? So I mean, what's happening in that realm? You know, we know that there was some stuff. Maybe you can talk a little bit about what happened in January. Was that, you know, after the big Ponzi scheme stuff, and there was some regulations that kind of came down to try and mitigate the damage that was being done. Yeah. But I mean, how obtrusive, or you know, how much is the government's poking around into the world of this?
So this is sort of like the beautiful mystery of Chinese government regulations, right? So, you know, what they do is they just kind of, they don't not do anything, right? So they kind of, you know,
well, we're certainly not going to do nothing.
That's right. But we're not going to not do that. So they kind of let it happen, right? So they just kind of let so far what we've seen is that the government's kind of letting all of these companies spring up, and they're getting the chance to take on investors and borrowers. And until something really bad happens, right, then they get involved, and then they say, oh my God, this is a horrible situation. We must crash it down, and they smash it completely. And then what they do is they sort of put out, what I like to say about China is, like, we don't really get laws here, we get guidelines, right? So they didn't really say, hey, we're going to make you do this and we're going to enforce that this happens, but we're going to strongly suggest that you follow the next set of rules.
Yeah.
One of them being, which I think all of us smart people in this room would understand, but one of them being, you need to have a bank which custodians your money.
Right? Yeah.
So, like, the fact that, like, I can go, you and I, 15 minutes from now, we buy our own web domain, we start up our own internet finance company, we bring in all this cash by 12 o'clock tonight. Tomorrow, we do whatever we want with it because that money essentially is sitting in our pocketbook. Wow. Like, it's not living anywhere else. And so the fact that we can now say that most of these platforms are required to, you know, use this third party custodial bank. It's like, oh, okay, there's a safety level in there now, right? So
yeah. So how is this still evolving, and where do startups take advantage of where this is going?
Yeah. So what I'm seeing right now in the market for startups is that, you know, we have an unbalanced equation where there's tons of investor demand out there, but very little on the asset side. And the asset side is not saying, okay, we don't have a ton of houses for you to take a mortgage out on, or a car to loan you, or a car loan to give to you. Instead, it's, you know, how am I going to find out, you know, 1,000 points of data on one person and create some sort of a credit track record on you. So we're looking for companies that really know how to surf and manage, you know, big data, create big analytics around, you know, personal credit lines or business credit lines, which we can then see, we can see through those eyes whether or not companies or individuals are credit worthy or more likely to repay their loans. We're also looking at a lot of we're also looking for a lot of companies who are pushing the envelope, right? So if we live in a world where all of my financial decisions and all of my my money or my cash or my wealth is in this online bank or this internet, you know, place, what do I want? Like, what else do I want to be able to do, right? I want to be able to call my friend who is based in Belgium, and I want him to know if he says, hey, I'm sending you a WeChat message. Yo, could you lend me $50,000? Yeah, because I get friends like that who are like, I need $50,000. So I just give him a $50,000 loan, right, through my chat, right? Yeah. Rather than having to go to a bank and fill out a promissory note. Yeah, you know, have to go through the whole thing. You know, I can just do this via some app.
Because right? our Guanxi, our relationship is already the due diligence.
It's already due diligence. I already trust this person. Yeah. I want to give him a loan. He's going to pay me back. And, you know, through some app, I can actually protect myself, and I'll have ways to, like, go after him later if he never pays me back, right? It would be legitimate. Yeah. In addition to that, right, what if I want to buy a car today and get a loan for it, but then I want to get a different car tomorrow and I want a different loan for that one, right? So who, you know, who's keeping track of whether or not my digital currency is capturing today's loan and tomorrow's loan? And if I'm one person and there's no track record behind every single loan that I have, right? So how do we do that, right? Like, where is my personal information kept, right? And who gets to see all of it across the whole stream? In addition to that, I think any startups that are really thinking forward about just sort of how do they want to live their life relative to their money, right? So, like, you know, do they want to see something that actually shows me a bank account that, I don't know, maybe has like some digital stream and shows me like, today you have this much money? And I don't know. That's why I'm calling on all the startups to kind of look at internet finance and say, you know, you're not doing this and we should be doing that. Or, you know, this is a huge problem and we should solve it. Fraud is a huge area right now. There's a couple of groups that their job is basically to be the gangsters of the industry and, like, go after people who don't pay. And so, you know, maybe there's an app for that, right?
Maybe there's ways that startups can make this better. Yeah. So what is Pitch It?
Oh, yeah. So thank you for that. So right now we've just opened up applications for Pitch It at LendIt. And essentially, we're asking anybody who has a startup idea that goes into fintech or comes into the internet finance space or marketplace lending space, if you have a great idea, if you think you can solve some of the problems that the internet finance industry is facing, we want to hear from you. And we want to have a chance to see whether or not we can connect you to the big industry. Pitch It at LendIt is basically our demo competition. It's the way that we embrace startups and allow them to get the audience, global audience from the LendIt community. Yeah, and I feel like in China, we just have so much more white space. It's an open calling card for anyone who's thinking about how they can make their mark on the world and building a startup around what does finance look like for you in the future, right? So if you're totally against the idea of like spending the entire afternoon sleeping at the bank in China and watching, you know, all these grandmas sit there without any of their money for weeks because the bank won't release however many renminbi, what do you want it to look like? And how does that look on your mobile phone versus how does it look in your wallet?
All right. Wow. So startups, there's definitely hope. And there's a lot of opportunity here in China. I mean,
big.
Yeah.
The white space comment is brilliant, I think, because there's just so much room to get creative. Awesome. Okay. Yeah.
So how do you do that, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Find me somewhere in China. Yeah, no.
In the cosmos.
That's right. In the cosmos. So that's right. Yeah. Check out my WeChat. I don't post many pictures, but when I do, yeah, folks like me. I'm just kidding. So I'm Dr. Taran, just as it is, no space. DrTharon. That's me on WeChat.
Awesome.
My Twitter's the same, at Dr. Taran. You can also just email me if you're interested in the pitch at LendIt. You can email me Taran, Tharon, at LendIt.com, just as it sounds, LendIt.com.
Awesome. All right. Well, thanks, Taran.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thanks, Ryan.
Thanks.
Thanks, Darren.
Thanks everybody.
Vivian. Thanks, David. Thanks, everybody, for listening.
Thanks to China Accelerator. You guys rock.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. And our listeners rock. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, thanks
for listening. Hope you enjoyed.